Island City Council for May 10th. The council is all present tonight. If you'd all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One
nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I have two changes to the agenda. I'd like to move item 6B up to follow item 3. So as soon as we deal with the agenda, we'll have item 6B. And I'd also like to add as item 6D, a proclamation recognizing the 100th anniversary of the Queen City Yacht Club. Are there any other changes to the agenda? Is there a motion to approve as amended?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Are there any conflicts of interest disclosed tonight? Though not technically a conflict of interest, I'll be requesting authority to issue a proclamation honoring Art Education Month, and I should disclose that one of my daughters is the Art Education Director of the Bainbridge Island Museum of Art. So, hearing no conflicts of interest, we'll now move to the police chief for a day ceremony. Chief Hamner?
Yes, Mayor. I would like to announce that I've lost my position, and I see that you're supporting this. See? It was time for me to go. I found a much more qualified replacement. So if I can have Judge McCullough come up here, and then if we could, should we stand around the other side?
Yeah.
I think we should.
Yeah.
And then,
Chief, we're going to need something.
Okay. I'm
okay.
Chief Hamner of the
Bainbridge
Island Police Department. And it looks like I'm out of a job.
Sure that she can earn it.
I'm Chief Hamner of the Bainbridge Island Police Department, and it looks like I'm out of a job. I'm just kidding. I am very excited to participate in Chief for a Day that's sponsored by the Criminal Justice Training Commission. The CJTC has been sponsoring Chief for a Day for many years. This gives young children an opportunity to focus on their lives and not on their illness. I had heard about the program, and so I talked to several chiefs who had participated and what they thought of the program. And many of them had talked about the lifelong effects that they had seen for chiefs that had been here a long time on these young people's lives. And I'm very passionate about making sure that young people have an opportunity to succeed, regardless of the challenges or trials that they face in their life. And so when I saw that and realized that there are young people that need to have assistance in overcoming some of their challenges, I want to be a part of that.
Zoe was diagnosed when I was still pregnant with what's called a congenital diaphragmatic hernia, and it means there was a hole in her diaphragm, and her stomach and intestines were up in her chest cavity, and her lungs didn't form correctly. And as a result of that, she spent many months in the hospital and on different bypass machines and feeding tubes and oxygen and ventilators. And now she's home, and over the years has gotten stronger and is now eating, but still has a condition that's called pulmonary hypertension. And it's a life-threatening chronic lung disease where the arteries in the lungs don't function as well as they should. And so her heart has to work extra hard to pump oxygenated blood. And so she wears a little medical pump and a central line and gets medication through that 24/7.
I initiated this program that we were going to participate in with our officer, Carla Sias, who is performing in her role as a community resource officer just phenomenally well. And I'd given her direction that we needed to find somebody who was in our community who really had needs that we could help. Once Carla brought me the candidate, Zoe, as chief for a day, it was a no-brainer.
I got an email from Carla Sias, the police department, asking if Zoe would be interested in being chief for a day. And we started talking about it and asked Zoe, and she was thrilled with the idea of being able to put people in jail for a day.
The event is on August 18th and begins with a motorcade at the Showwear Center in Kent and works its way down to the police academy in Burien. On that day, the children will have lunch, they'll be sworn in as chiefs, and be treated to activities and gifts. As part of sponsoring a child, the Bainbridge Island Police Department has agreed to hold a fundraiser for our new Chief Zoe for gifts, school supplies, or any needs the family may have.
I'm Ian Mitchell, and I was Bainbridge Island Police Chief for a day in 2010. I know that when I was Police Chief for the day, I got a huge table of gifts that I just loved. And I think Zoe would like that too. That's why I really hope that the community can help fundraise and give that to Zoe.
If you would like to donate to the Chief for a Day fundraiser for Chief Zoe, please stop by or mail donations to the Bainbridge Island Police Department, Attention Chief Zoe, 625 Winslow Way East, Bainbridge Island, Washington, 98110. I found out tonight that Chief Zoe, the ceremony was going to be at 7:30, and as she made the request to move it up, the mayor immediately listened to what she had to say. So I've got a few other requests coming from Chief Zoe that's going to get done very quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief, and congratulations, Chief Zoe. So we have a number of items on the agenda tonight that...
Mayor, can I interrupt you 1 second? I just want to recognize Mom, Shannon, Dad, Jason. Let's see, Chief Ian Mitchell and his mother, Alyssa, and also the ones who produced this video for us, Rodney Sherwood, Chris Towie, and Jeff Kessler, and thank you to them. Sorry. And for those that are here for this ceremony, there are some treats out back, if that's what you're here for.
Just wait a second and let the room clear. We have a number of items on the agenda tonight that may spark some public comment. We're going to hear public comment at this time on anything either on the agenda or not on the agenda. And then people that would like to get their comments on the record and need to leave can do so. Then as we move through the agenda, we will take public comment on each item as we discuss it. You don't get to comment twice. So is there anyone who would like to comment at this time?
I think I was first on the list.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. My name is Gloria Saylor, and I live on Agate Pass Road, Northeast. I'm here tonight because I've been out of town, but on my return, read the letters to the Bainbridge Review and saw the largely negative view of a study to determine what the benefits and costs of a publicly owned electric utility would be. The reasons stated just didn't make sense to me. Some stated that this would be an additional tax to pay for a bond, which is not my understanding. I understand that when we pay our electric bill, it would go for buying our electricity and to pay off the bond, which was buying the infrastructure. Others stated that we don't want improvements now when someone else is paying for them, so why would it be different if we owned it? Which indicates to me that they don't understand that we are paying for them now. We are paying for maintenance here and for the corporate salaries of people like Mr. Wappler and the unknown percentage of profits that go to Australia. I don't agree that the study of the electric utility should be put on the ballot this fall. We elected you as our council members to make day-to-day decisions about what's in the best interests of the island's public. Really big ticket items and who represents us do go out for a vote. Putting the electric utility study on the ballot actually increases its cost. We all, council members and the public, deserve the objective information that a professional study would provide. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to come in at this time?
I provided a hard copy as well. Hi, my name is Charles Keating. I wrote you earlier today to get my information on the record. I live on island. I'm an IT consultant. I'm a long-term business person. I've advised businesses all the way from Boeing down to small mom and pops. So I've taken an interest in this because it's kind of a project to look at how city government works in a way. This particular project, I'm very environmental. I understand the concerns. I also understand how it can be portrayed and how sometimes what appears to be the correct decision is actually not correct at all. I was kind of sad. I was here a couple weeks ago and heard how this project has been portrayed. And the problem is you can't make good decisions if you are presented with incorrect information. For instance, I had 9 points here. For instance, the way this project was represented was that, you know, you're going to have a lower electric bill, you're going to be greener, you're going to have local control, you're going to have all these benefits. And the reality is, in almost all things, you don't get everything you want. It's going to be a trade-off. If you want local control and you want to have a greener electric bill, you're probably going to be paying a lot more. There's real problems with that. But to portray this as an unrealistic goal where you're going to get all these benefits is not correct. And I think when people signed the petition, I reference an article, they were thinking, this is such a great thing, why don't we do this? So I don't think it represents an informed opinion, is what I would say, so not necessarily the will of people. The Jefferson Public Utility District was represented as an example. It's running $2 million a year in deficit. They've deferred $3 million in capital costs. They will be millions of dollars in the hole every year for the next 30 years. Next 30 years. This was highlighted as the example to follow. I mean, just from a governance point of view, you would not want to repeat that example. And yet it was highlighted 2 weeks ago as an example to follow. So it's almost like cognitive dissonance to say that we should follow that. The reliability argument. PSC has been very responsive to our needs in trying to create redundant power paths and ways to improve reliability. We're on the end of a line. And as such, we're subject to interruptions in power when something interrupts that circuit. You can make redundant networks and things of that nature that will improve it, but you're not going to be able to do that if at the same time we don't want those improvements. And yet PSC is being held to a standard, being accountable to those issues. Green power argument is very flawed. There's not enough hydro in order to produce all of the energy you're going to need. Energy is produced in a mix, and this does not allow for a truly green solution. So it's basically sold on a lot of assumptions, and I would welcome any comments or concerns from the public to do this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor? Al?
Yes.
Will people have an opportunity to have public comment at the time that we bring up the municipal?
That's correct.
People may want that clarified.
Right. Just to be clear, when we get to the public, the electric utility item on the agenda, we will also be accepting public comment at that time, only you don't get to talk twice. So if people need to talk now, feel free.
I'll wait till that time.
Hello, my name is Lisa Berg. I live in the North Ward area. I'd like the City Council to know that I'm against hiring a consulting company for the feasibility study for an electric municipality at this time. City Council, please vote no on for the feasibility study. Let's focus on priorities in front of us already, the police department, roads, downtown economy, and schools. Let's work with PSC to get greener power for Bainbridge Island and build up our infrastructure for more stability. Let's not get to the point where we find ourselves like Jefferson County PUD with an electric municipality with audit findings, billing issues, more outages, and rising rates. Let's leave running an electric company to PSC so we can really focus on our city. Please vote no.
I'm Mike Sherloff. I've lived here about 32 years. I have the opposite view. I think this is probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for you guys to bring clean power to the island at actually a lower cost. I have some information with me. I'll give it to you. LCOE, lowest cost or levelized cost of electricity, costs for wind and solar are going down below coal now. So if we form a public municipal utility, we can instantly source 100%, as you already know, I think, from hydro, from Bonneville. There's a set aside for that. That's at a lower cost. I think the risk that people have thrown in for higher cost actually goes to Puget Sound Energy, where you're going to get stuck with stranded coal cleanup costs and, I'm sorry, stranded loan costs with that power plant. The last two they expect to run for 20 years. I really have to wonder if that's going to happen. Coal plants are shutting down. Who's going to pay off that loan? Also, the cleanup costs. They're already reapportioning our money to pay for the cleanup costs of the coal. That money was headed towards clean wind power. There's plenty of clean wind power in Montana when you get to 140 meters, which is where the state of art for wind turbines is. So I would like to see the study go ahead. I would like to see you guys investigate that. There's been a few false statements already. Jefferson County's rates are not going up. Ours are. So, yes, that's all I have. I do have some information I'd like to pass out later. Thank you.
Thank you. If you have something, you can leave it with the clerk, and she'll see to it that it gets circulated. If you have something, you can leave it with the clerk, and she'll see to it that it gets around. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Brian Anderson. I live on Bainbridge Island. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you again. I'm also chair of a group called Climate Action Bainbridge. We started about 5 years ago as a group called Coal Free Bainbridge, writing letters to PSC, the board, the president, trying to convince them as part of the Coal Free PSC campaign around Washington State to move away from coal, to move away from fossil fuels to renewable energy. I speak to you tonight urging the council to go ahead and fund the study so we can get the facts and learn what it will take to create an electric PUD and whether that is right for Bainbridge Island. I'd like to address, I was really interested to hear Mr. Wappler's comments last week when he talked about this bill that was passed in the legislature this last year. What it did effectively is it used $200 million of taxpayers' money. This was part of a federal stimulus package and grants that tax credits that PSC gets for the wind energy that they've created. And they convinced the Washington State Legislature to use this money to cover the cleanup costs for Colstrip when they shut down plants 1 and 2. So while PSC has enjoyed the profits from selling us electricity over the years, they're trying to stick us with the cleanup costs. This is a perfect example of the privatization of profits and the socialization of costs. It's not like PSC did not know that these plants were going to need to be shut down at some time and that there was a cleanup that would be required. And they've not taken any of the money out of their profits and set it aside for that. Now they're coming to us as the ratepayers. We know that it will cost more than they will need additional funds, and they will be coming back to the ratepayers again. They also gave no dates for the closure of plants 1 and 2. 1 and 2 are the old ones. They said someday, actually, the legislation that passed the House says that they cannot be closed before 2023. This is a special amendment put in by our representative Doug Erickson from Whatcom County, who is also the state chair of the Donald Trump for President campaign. He hosted him up in Linden last week. So there's a lot of interesting stuff in the IRP available on Puget Sound Energy's site. I would urge all of you to go there and read it. It's full of a lot of the history of Puget Sound Energy and Colstrip and how they've been sued by local residents, settled out of court for polluting their air and their water. They've been sued by local ranchers for polluting the groundwater. They have these pump-back wells as the plume of polluted water is going away from the plant. They pump it back into these seeping ash water ponds, and it continues to pollute the water around Colstrip, Washington. So we need to get away from using this company as our source of electricity. There is now a forest fire burning in Alberta, Canada in May. The drought in 2015 caused $330 million of crop losses in Washington State, and the Marshall Islands were going to be underwater in a few decades. So we need to... Okay, thanks. I'm stopping. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else wish to speak at this time? Yes, sir.
David Johnson on New Brooklyn Road. The gentleman who just spoke made a misstatement. He said he was referring to the legislation and the restriction in that legislation that prevented PSE from closing coal strips 1 and 2 before 2023. What the gentleman didn't say is that that section of the legislation Governor Inslee vetoed, and the law as it stands allows PSE to close Colstrip Units 1 and 2 at any time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else at this time? Again, we will accept further public comment when we get to this agenda item. All right, hearing none, we will move on to the City Manager's Report.
Just a quick, quick announcement. This past Saturday, we completed the second of three ward meetings. Both the Central Ward and North Ward meetings were very successful with good attendance and many topics covered. The South Ward meeting is this Saturday, starting at 10 o'clock at the Marketplace at Pleasant Beach Village.
Anything for the, any questions for the city manager? Move on then to the presentations. Item 6A, proclamation declaring May 15th through 21 as National Police Week. This is one of the proclamations that you've given me blanket authority, and while I won't read the proclamation itself, I will give you a little background information for the benefit of those here and those listening. This year, again, communities across the United States will come together during National Police Week, May 15 through 21, to honor and remember those law enforcement officers who made the ultimate sacrifice, as well as the family members, friends, and fellow officers they left behind. In 1962, President Kennedy proclaimed May 15th as National Peace Officers Memorial Day. In the calendar week in which May 15th falls is National Police Week, established by a joint resolution of Congress in 1962, National Police Week pays special recognition to those law enforcement officers who have lost their lives in the line of duty for the safety and protection of others. In tribute to the American law enforcement officers and at the request of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Foundation, I'm guessing, Public Law 103-322 designates May 15th National Peace Officers Memorial Day, which is one of only 2 days each year during which government agencies, businesses, and residents are to fly their U.S. flags at half-staff. The Bainbridge Island Police Department encourages citizens to honor our fallen heroes by flying their U.S. flags at half-staff on that day. Locally, you can show your support for law enforcement by picking up a blue ribbon from the police department. The ribbons can be displayed or worn to honor National Police Week and to show support for local officers. Citizens can also display blue lights or candles in their homes or business windows throughout the week. It gives me pleasure to sign a proclamation declaring National Police Week. Next item on the agenda is not one that has been pre-approved, and it's a proclamation declaring May 2016 as Art Education Month. May is Art Education Month, whether we proclaim it or not, and it's a time that we publicly recognize and celebrate the positive impacts the arts have on our students, schools, and communities. Arts are a core component in our state's definition of basic education. For the students in our state to have the best chance of fulfilling their potential, learning in and through the arts must be part of their education. A standard K-12 curriculum that includes arts education as part of everyday learning fosters well-rounded graduates who enter college and the workforce with creative skills and a competitive edge. Credible research has demonstrated consistently better outcomes for students highly involved in the arts, including better grades, less likelihood of dropping out, and more positive attitudes about school. These same studies show that the high levels of arts participation make the greatest difference for economically disadvantaged students. Additionally, creativity and innovation are the new watchwords in almost every career field, and these are the skills needed to prepare our children for life in the 21st century. As we seek to develop the leaders we need for a future we cannot predict, we cannot define a complete education without the arts, and all students of Bainbridge Island deserve this opportunity. So I ask that the council give me the authority to sign a proclamation declaring May 2016 as Art Education Month in Bainbridge Island.
I move that council authorized the mayor to sign the proclamation declaring May 2016 is Art Education Month.
Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And motion carries unanimously. If you'd give me just a minute, I think there are members of the art education community here. If you would all care to come up to the podium and be recognized. Are you doing it all by yourself?
At the peanut galleries out there. Hi, Dad.
Gives me great pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks. On behalf of the art education community on Bainbridge Island, and on behalf of the school district, which unfortunately couldn't be represented here tonight, the art museum, on behalf of students, children, parents, community members, thank you very much for proclaiming May 2016 Arts Education Month.
The last item under presentations is a item that I took the liberty of adding. Chief Hamner and I have been invited to attend a celebration this coming Sunday, the 100th anniversary of the Queen City Yacht Club. And the Queen City Yacht Club has had an outstation here on Bainbridge Island for the last 50 years this year, and is an active participant in our 4th of July parade, and has been a very cooperative presence in hosting our police boat at their dock and providing their facilities for our police department to conduct their graduation ceremonies from their Citizens Police Academy. And so I respectfully request the authority to sign a proclamation recognizing May 8th, 2016 as the centennial anniversary of the Queen City Yacht Club.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries unanimously, and thank you. Move on now to new business, item 7A, Fletcher Landing Road End Improvements Construction Award. Mr. Lovelace.
Good evening. This is a agenda item that to consider placement of the Fletcher Landing Road End Improvement Project on the consent agenda at the next business meeting on May 24th. This project includes
removal of existing concrete bulkhead, construction of a rockery shoreline, stabilization, including beach access, planting, and miscellaneous other items. Bids were solicited, and actually the bid opening was, I think, today. There was one today and one yesterday. Anyway, we did receive two bids, and we'll be bringing back the agenda package was built with blanks because the bids hadn't been opened yet. But we received two bids. The low bid is approximately $165,000 by Sound Excavation. So I'm confusing projects here. This one was bid on April 29th, and the low bidder was Sea Level Bulkhead Builders in the amount of $68,936.18. And so the recommendation is to move the award to Sea Level Bulkhead Builders to the May 24th consent agenda.
Are there any questions for Mr. Lovelace? Is there any public comment on this subject?
My name is Vince Larson. I live in the neighborhood of Fletcher Bay and have lived there for almost 50 years. This effort to enhance the use of the Fletcher Landing Road End is a project that has been going on for many, many years, and I'm very pleased if the council can put this on the consent agenda for the next meeting. I'm also pleased by the fact that the bid from Sea Level Bulkhead Contractors at $68,000 is very much more in line with the expense which the long-established road end committee worked on and is much less than it was feared the cost would be. So I would thank the council for moving ahead on this and putting it on the consent agenda.
Thank you, Vincent. Thanks for all your hard work and the Road Ends Committee over the years to bring this to fruition. Is there any further discussion of the council? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
My name is Adam Matchek. I'm also a resident in the neighborhood. Haven't lived there as long as Vince, but that landing is a really nice thing to have, and I think that this project will improve the safety overall. Last September, I saw two boys trying to carry a canoe around that bulkhead, and one fell and came about that close to splitting his head open. So just having the safety improved by having a gradual incline, it's a big improvement, allow folks with mobility issues to enjoy the shoreline. Just overall improving the access for the hundreds of residents in the area that can have a small slice of Bainbridge waterfront in a nice afternoon like today. So I really appreciate the council moving forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comment? No.
I move that the city council forward the Fletcher Landing Road End Improvements Project Construction Award Sea-Level Bulkhead Builders in the base bid amount of $68,936 to the May 24th consent agenda.
I second. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item is the Island-Wide Asphalt Repair Construction Award.
Annually, the City Council budgets approximately $600,000 with inflationary adjustments every year to do island-wide asphalt repairs. We've been on a pattern of every other year doing a grind-and-patch type of repair where we grind out full lane widths and repave with asphalt. And other years we do an extensive chip sealing program. So sometimes it overlaps, but this year is a grind-and-fault asphalt repair program. So the map doesn't totally show up, but it's in your package. It shows the roads that are involved in the project. This is the one we did have the bid opening on Monday, and we received a bid, only one bid, but it was well within our estimate. And it will be able to do within that $624,000 budgeted this year all the project, including the base bid and four alternates. So starts at the north, Seabold and Henderson, Park Hill Road, coming down off of near Sunrise and Valley, Wardwell, a small section in the center of the island, Hanson Road over near Fletcher Bay, Ridge Lane down in the center of the island again, Buckland Hill coming off the head of the bay, Yomalt over near Yomalt Point, a couple sections of Old Mill, and a section of Palomino Drive down in Linwood Center area. So we'll be bringing the agenda item is to bring back once again the contract for the May 24th consent agenda, but I can tell you we did have a bid opening yesterday, and it was Lakeside Industries, and the entire amount for all the work was $576,000, so it's within our CIP budget.
Any questions for Mr. Lovelace? Any public comment on this item?
Hey, could we just clarify the cost? So I think I'm looking at the right page here in our
packet. It is.
And it says that the engineer's estimate was $310,000 to $325,000.
Right, that is for the base bid.
Okay.
And then the base bid came in at $276,000 approximately, but all the other bid items were alternates, and so we put those in there so we could cut off the project at certain budget points, and it the overall budget amount in the CIP was $624,000, and so the base bid plus all those alternates is less than that.
Falls within the CIP budget amount.
Right.
And I was just curious because we've had some residents recently talk to us about Wardwell Road, mm-hmm. and so this is going to be a small piece of that. But
right, this is just a small section really at the corner of Bucksit heading up to the intersection with Derby Downs, the road that goes into Derby Downs. The main east-west expanse of Wardwell from that point toward Sportsman Club. That was the one where we tried to get a couple times stormwater grants and we weren't successful. So we'll be bringing that back next year in a budget to consider a bigger CIP project. It would expand this entire budget. That's our annual program, but the council can consider funding it as a separate reconstruction project next year, and we will bring that back for consideration. The reason it can't be done under this island-wide asphalt project is because it has extensive storm drainage work in it, and so there's a lot of scope that's not included in this contract. This contract is strictly grind off the asphalt, lay down a new patch of asphalt, no piping, no utilities, that kind of thing.
Thanks. I just wanted to clarify that for anyone who might be wondering. Mm-hmm.
I also point out that I've had some continuing communication with the folks from Wardwell, and although they would like to have the big project done this year, they're delighted to have that short section, which I think is the nastiest section, cleaned up, and they're also happy that there's some apparent likely certainty to getting this done next year. So any other questions for Mr. Lovelace? Is there a motion?
I move that the City Council forward the 2016 Islandwide Asphalt Repair Construction Award to, I don't have the name here.
No. It will be Lakeside Industries.
Lakeside Industries in the bid amount of, and the total bid was 624, is that right?
No, I'll have to bring it back next week. That's the budget amount. The bid amount was 576 something. We'll need the exact number for consent next week. So.
Okay. To the May 24th, 2016 unfinished business agenda.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries unanimously.
So as we talked about Wardwell, this next item is the Mountain View Road Reconstruction and Drainage Project. I'm sorry, I didn't let you introduce it. I just rolled right into it.
You're good.
So this is a smaller scale, but it's a similar type thing where a road had deteriorated over the years significantly and It was related to poor drainage, so it required storm drainage improvements as well as repaving. So this Mountain View Road project reconstruction we've been tracking for several years in the capital improvements plan. And this is the one that had bid opening today, and there were two bidders, and it looks like the low bidder is Sound Excavation in the amount of approximately $165,000. But once again, that'll be next week on the unfinished business agenda. So this basically repaves, redoes the drainage and repaves the road from Manitou Beach to the shoreline on off of Mountain View. We anticipated that it would come in higher than the CIP amount, so it had been included in the finance director's preview of budget adjustments needed in 2016. So we'll be bringing a budget adjustment along with the contract to the unfinished business agenda on May 24th.
Any questions for Mr. Lovelace on this item? Is there any public comment? Hearing none, is there a motion?
I move that City Council forward the Mountain View Road Drainage Improvement Project Construction Bid Award to the bid amount, as Barry mentioned it, and the budget amendment in the difference between the CIP and the bid amount from the general fund, increasing the spending authority for this project to the May 24, 2016 unfinished business agenda.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. The next item on the agenda is the Olympic Drive non-motorized improvement project. Professional services agreement.
Right. So this agenda item is to increase the professional services agreement to do some more design work required as a result of the recent decision by the Federal Highways Administration to reject the proposed experimental center left turn green lane for the project. So the scope of this project is, this was the scope that we asked for on the overhead here. So it's basically a non-motorized improvement from Winslow Way to the ferry terminal. The intent is to improve all non-motorized means of transportation, sidewalk, pedestrian crossings, bicycle lanes on both sides. And we've talked about this extensively. We received a grant for this project in 2014. We had an extensive process to come up with a preferred design that council bought into. It included this conceptual design here that has a downhill bike track on the west side, an uphill left turn bike lane from Olympic Drive onto Winslow Way coming off the ferry, an uphill right east side bike lane on the right-hand side of the road, and bike boxes potentially at the intersection as well as the intersection down below. We went through over a year of working this design and the design options with WashDOT, getting CEPA approvals and right-of-ways and all those things required. Thought that we are on track and had bought in from WashDOT, but at the federal level, it was denied on March 31st. So this is a project we've been aiming to get constructed this year, of course, and we have all the funding lined up to do that. So that threw us for a loop, obviously, at a very late point in time. So that decision was taken to the Non-Motorized Transportation Committee by city staff. They had a significant discussion about it at the last meeting. And the proposal or the plan to move the project forward by city staff was to pursue it in phases. So we already know there's going to be a phase two, and we're in process of applying for that grant. This is a state bicycle pedestrian grant program, so it's not actually federal funding, it is state funding. Phase two of the project would be to do more improvements on the east side to widen the sidewalk and to extend the bike lane farther down to the Kitsap Transit area. And then phase three could potentially be, the plan was we'd back off the left-turn bike lane for phase one. We'd apply for the extra right-of-way and the sidewalk improvements and the widening on phase two. We would pursue and then an experimental treatment again with a left-hand turn. We had been in discussions with Portland State University, which has a grant to do these experimental programs and to document and to try to assist with those experimental initiatives. So that would be phase three. Obviously, this is time to take for all these phases to take place. So we have phase one fully funded. We could proceed with that. Phase two, we're pursuing a grant. Then phase three would be more of a study to prove the existing conditions, to prove the volumes of traffic, the bicycle movements, the conflicts or the safety issues, and to try to build the case to come back to the left turn bike lane, at which point in time we would have enough right-of-way that it wouldn't be a significant project. It would be primarily a striping project to move lanes around and fit that one back in. So the major construction would be phases one and two, which we'd pursue the grants for, and phase three would be more of a prove it and then getting permission to restripe. So I think as City Council it might have seen, there's been some recent input from the Squeaky Wheels Bicycle Group to try to push harder at this point in time to try to get the left turn lane accepted by the Federal Highway Administration in the first phase. So not to make a stronger push, they just denied it. There was no real conditions on it. It was so in order to salvage the project this year, we came up with a three-phase plan. Input from Squeaky Wheels is that they would like to see us push harder, which would definitely delay the project. We wouldn't. There's no way we'd get it done this year, and really, I'm not sure. It'd be speculative just to try to guess when it might be approved if it would. So this PSA amendment, this professional services amendment that's on the agenda would be to pay the consultant to redo the design, get rid of the left-turn bike lane right now, quickly change it back to a design that we know can get approved and try to move forward with phase one construction this year.
Questions for Mr. Loveless?
I'm just wondering, Barry, if you can talk about the timing and the implications of grants and how those might change if there is a delay.
Well, yeah, unusually there's, you know, we on the federal grants, we have these really strict timelines now with Puget Sound Regional Council because the federal government has become very strict on obligation, and if you don't spend the money by a certain date, you have to return it, and there's only a six-month extension. And after that, if you don't obligate it, the money goes back in the pot, and you can try again another time. It's not so tight on the state funds, so it's a little bit indeterminate of when they might get tired of the lack of movement and decide, hey, this doesn't look like this project's going forward. We want to take the money back, but there is no hard and firm date.
Barry, do we lose any leverage in arguing for a left-turn bicycle lane if we allow the project to proceed forward this year in a three-phase staged process?
I'm not sure what the leverage we have at this point in time. I mean, they've given us a grant. They've told us our proposed design does not meet any standard. We're trying to create a standard that can be accepted and prove it. That's experimental. I'm not sure what leverage they have to accept it. I mean, what can we, other than political pressure and...
Another way to put it, is there any downside from your perspective in starting the project this year on a three-stage basis, even though it does not include the left-turn lane? And obviously, we'd like that, and I can speak as a former bike commuter that it's desperately needed.
Right. That's the downside in that the project, I think, I know when it was developed by the community with community buy-in, that was a major significant feature of it. And we know that there's, a high percentage of the bicycles coming off the ferry do make that left turn. And they will still be making that left turn even if it's not there, I'm sure of it. Even though there'll be a slower uphill lane on the right side, you know, the bikers that do it now will continue to do it. So the downside is that we're getting less than what was desired and envisioned by the community.
Go ahead. Is the project worth doing if we don't get the left turn lane? I mean, are we
right? So what do we get? So we get a downhill separated bicycle track that ties in. So right now, as you come down the road, the bicycles are in the road or on the sidewalk until they can get past the ferry, the toll booths, and they can swing around to the right. There's a path now. There'll be a new path, so they will have a downhill bicycle lane that gets them out of the traffic, around the toll booths, into the ferry. So that's a good improvement. There will be a uphill bicycle lane on the right-hand side of the road after the intersection, the first intersection. And it will be separated up by, a 2-foot median or so, up until it gets too tight as it starts to turn the corner near the as it approaches the police station. So there'll be that uphill, and there'll be a wider sidewalk on the west side too, on the west side. So improved sidewalk and pedestrian on the left side, downhill bicycle lane on the left side or the west side, uphill bicycle lane on the right side.
So the bike lane on the right side or the east side ends in the middle?
No, it starts in the middle. So there's not enough room.
But then it stops at the police station?
No, it stays there. Just the median goes away. The median kind of gets squeezed out. So as you approach up to the corner, you kind of run out of space, and that's where we need a little more right away and deal with the police station potentially. So phase two would hopefully extend that right-hand bicycle lane all the way down past Kitsap Transit, and then all the way to the ferry eventually when the Washington State Ferries redoes their overhead loading. They're going to get rid of that bicycle ramp. That sidewalk ramp that comes up. So we have the overhead loading. We have the sidewalk ramp that also comes up. That sidewalk ramp will go away. Everything will be overhead loading for pedestrians, and that'll take the sidewalk out and allow room then all the way to the ferry for a bicycle.
One of the things that we heard in an email sent to us was that the Non-Motorized Transportation Advisory Committee didn't have a chance to review this new proposal we're talking about tonight, but in your remarks you said that they did. So
Wayne can confirm that.
So they thoroughly talked about all this already?
I think so. Wayne was there. I wasn't there.
It was discussed. The majority of the meeting was spent talking about a trail at Islandwood, which did crowd out this discussion, but it was discussed.
Okay.
There was in the same way we're struggling with it tonight, the committee also was struggling. Mm-hmm. It did not take an action. It did not vote to approve it, support it, or otherwise. It heard it and asked a lot of the same questions we're getting here tonight. So there was a discussion, but it was abbreviated.
And in that discussion, were they discussing this three-phase option? In the comments we got over email, there was no discussion of that. What I got from the emails was, hey, if we change it and go forward tonight, we're just going to lose the left turn lane forever.
No, what Barry's presented is what was discussed.
That's what they talked about.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Barry, I take it that with the fact that you heard about this on March 31st, that there hasn't been any discussion with the feds after that about any sort of informal appeal or reconsideration or anything. We had pointed out to us by one of the squeaky wheels an article online indicating that the federal highway people had changed their guidelines with regard to what they required and wouldn't require with regard to some bicycle traffic improvements. And I wonder if that had any impact on the possibility that they might rethink their position.
Possibly, but no, you're correct. We didn't. I think we quickly shifted to, okay, what's next and how do we keep the project moving? So there's, frankly, it's going to be tight to get construction done this year because we still, even if we say let's proceed with the revised design, we have to get the design revised, get it resubmitted, get it accepted, and there's still some process. So, Patty, you have something you want to add?
MIG SBR, I'm Patricia Jenkins, I'm the project manager. MIG SBR asked after March 31st, could they approach Federal Highways themselves, because they did want to fight the issue. So we had videotaped the intersection. In fact, a lot of the squeaky wheel members, Demi, had extensive video at night, during the day, weekends, you name it. So we kind of crossed our fingers. We sent all the video to them, but we again got a denial. So they did. It kind of drug us out a little bit of time, because that was another 3 weeks after the first denial, and then we had to wait for the secondary response. So MIG SVR, the consultant, did try. But again, we were trying to move forward. The one thing I did want to say is the one thing we did during the process was the road was really narrow. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but originally we were trying for 15 feet, and then it was 25 feet, and we actually ended up with 30 additional foot. And it basically, where the curb cut starts is where you can almost see from the end of the park, it actually expands out. So one of the issues that we had when we were redesigning it, or SBR, MIG SBR, was, which we actually have all this additional space, because we were really hoping that we would get that center green lane. And my hope is, I know it seems like it's really cumbersome, you have first phase, second phase, third phase, but really, we don't have to give back that space. That space is going to be available in those lanes. And my hope is that as the future analysis, I mean, we had some data, our consultant tried their best to create an argument, but as we continue on, we can continue to study the intersection and the road to justify the need towards Federal Highways versus just continuing. I mean, we've been beating that door for 2 years trying to get the experimental design through. But potentially, if we have the additional data, we never gave back that space. It is still, you know, that's why we went through the whole right-of-way process and to widen it in there. We do have a pinch point. It's right at the our police department, and we kind of knew that, but we weren't sure what the future plans, and that'll be easy to alleviate even with a small wall, and we can expand. So I just wanted to mention that, so in case you were wondering.
Thank you. Any other questions from council at this time?
Yeah, I'm sorry, just one more. So just to be clear, if we move forward with the phases, all we're losing is the certainty that we'll have funding in the future for the left turn lane? What are we giving up if we do phases?
Well, we're getting a project that I described right there, that we're getting an improvement that we can fund with the current grant, you know, the bike lanes on both sides and the sidewalk improvements and those kind of things, crosswalk improvements, actually. And then we have an opportunity already to apply every 2 years, and it's coming up right now, to apply for phase two and to work on the uphill sidewalk on the other side, and then start documenting how these improvements are being used and what kind of issues can be shown to potentially justify that restriping the right-of-way there.
Is there any public comment on this subject?
Doug Ralph, 12266 Kenneth Place. And phase four would be extending that bicycle lane down to the ferry boat, which was mentioned earlier, because they were taking the sidewalk out and all the passengers were going to go over the overhead ramp. Has anyone ever thought about plan B? Because those overhead ramps are closed from time to time. When the hydraulics don't work on the gangway, what is the plan to load the passengers? I just thought you should be aware of it. Thank you.
Any other discussion on this subject? Yes, please come up.
Ross Hathaway, 4426 Blakely Avenue Northeast, president of Squeaky Wheels. So thanks for taking this on tonight. And, you know, it's a tough subject. We think it's time to take a pause on this and get this right instead of breaking in several phases with the disruptions of many different construction projects. The funding for the initial grant is not a threat. That said, we'll have our heads handed to us if we build something that doesn't address the primary purpose of the project. And so I think it's even though we really, really do appreciate the staff's eagerness to get this done, this is really important on most projects to drive a project very hard, and I think that's very important. I'm a project manager myself. In this case, I think it's very important to get it right, at least get it functional. Take the time. We will pursue a more aggressive approach with FHWA, with our electeds at the national level. To work on this. We met with SVR yesterday and started laying out a plan for this. So I encourage you guys to take a deep breath and not build something that doesn't do the job. So, questions?
Mayor, could I pause a question to the speaker? I don't understand what the loss would be. I mean, it seems like, is there something that would be built that would impede the later development of a left-turn bike lane?
Generally speaking, when you build a project, going back and rebuilding the same section of road later date is more difficult. And politically, you're going to have a lot of pressure from people saying, wait a second, I thought we were going to get a left-hand turn lane. What happened here? So I think it's very important that no matter what, you're going to need to tell a story about why this happened the way it did. I think it makes more sense to go ahead and apply for phase two now and build one project that widens the road and does all of the purposes that the program is stated to do. I think it will require a more considered effort than what we have done to date. I think FHWA will probably sway. We did talk to them initially about this project several years ago. They were supportive of it. I think that we can sway them again. Is that, Wayne, you look a little skeptical there. Okay, just checking.
Thank you.
Okay, any questions? Thank you for your time.
Lisa?
Good evening, Council. I'm Lisa Macchio, and I wrote you two emails about this. I'm a board member of Squeaky Wheels. We were up here supporting this design. I think it's a great design, and I think everybody really needs a left-turning bike lane. And so I think Ross has an email to send to you about this. I also think that it's really important to understand what that other design might be and how it really doesn't work, the phase one, to address some of the problems. I always like to point out, and maybe the staff already did, to highways, you know, people think of this as a highway, right? But really, that little section is not really, when you drive on it, it's really not a highway. So I'm having some real difficulties understanding why, and maybe I can understand why somebody in New Jersey, okay, who looked at this project said, and looked at some videos and said, you know, it doesn't meet our standards. This is a really, really unique situation. And what I understood about, you know, some issue with the curve, people aren't driving 50 miles per hour or 35 miles per hour around that curve. You guys should all go down there on the 530 ferry and watch the cyclists on that lane. I'm very concerned about merging in the phase one project, having a Charo lane coming off the ferry. I can tell you that will be a disaster. First of all, you don't want bikes intermingling with cars as they're trying to come off the ferry, and that's what phase one has us doing. We're supposed to take the lane and share it with cars. You know what? I think ferries is going to be very upset with the offloading timing. We're all going to have a worse situation than we do if we have the bikes sharing that lane on the way up with cars, motorcycles, and potentially buses. It's just not a smart thing to do. Charo lanes sometimes work, but for this situation, when you have these pulses of traffic, I would not want to take the lane right there, and I'm an aggressive bicycle rider. So right now, we all ride on the yellow, and we ride in the other lane when the buses aren't coming, which is dangerous, but that's what you're going to continue to have. Bikes moving over into the downcoming traffic because nobody wants to take the lane. So I really would ask us to think very carefully about other solutions than the phased approach. Thank you.
Good evening. Leif Horwitz, 9689 Northeast Northtown Loop. I'm also the chair of the Non-Motorized Transportation Advisory Committee. And first of all, I wanted to thank Patty, Chris Hammer, the city engineer, and the consultants for all the work on this. We talked about this project at great length over the course of probably 6 months. And I think many of us are disappointed, but also understanding of the changes in this particular plan. What I'd like to suggest to council is that perhaps you would be willing to delay this by 2 weeks. The committee will be meeting a week from tomorrow. I think we could make this our priority topic. We could discuss whether there are some viable alternatives here. We haven't really had a chance to absorb these changes. And I can speak for myself, I can't speak for the full committee, but I think many of us would be reluctant to see this go forward as is. And the feeling is if we maybe wait those 2 weeks for your next meeting, perhaps we could have some viable alternatives for you. No guarantees, but I think it's worth trying. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Good evening, Council. My name is Rick Longendoon at 342 Winslow Way West. I'm also here as a Squeaky Wheels board member. Also was responsible for helping to set up the original non-motorized committee and also was one of the founding members of the committee and have been involved with the non-motorized issues for about the last 15, 20 years. I think looking at this project has been on the top of our list for all these years, right? 15, 20 years of trying to improve that intersection. And I believe that it's prudent, based on what Leif was saying, that if it's truly 2 weeks, what's the risk we're right and what's the risk we're wrong of just taking that extra 2 weeks to reassess this, see if we can look at other options. And the one part that we've kind of inferred a couple times this evening, but we actually haven't even said the safety word. The really critical question for me is, and it's not really clear, is that whether after spending the money and doing this, is it going to be actually safer, or is it going to be safer than our current condition? What Lisa was mentioning is actually there may be some risk it actually may be less safe. If that's the case, we really can't allow that to occur. So I'd really suggest that we support what Leif is mentioning this evening and delay for a couple of weeks and see if we can make some improvements. So thank you.
Yep. Anyone else? Gentlemen. And Sarah. Go ahead, sir.
Barry, would you comment on the suggestion that this be delayed for 2 weeks? Is there any downside to doing that?
Well, every week counts at this point in time if we want to get something done this year. I can't say it would be a deal killer. We're still waiting for alignment approval from WashDOT that I think we hope to get next week maybe. And what it would do is if we approved it tonight, we could have the consultant immediately start designing. We'd be ready as soon as we got that alignment approval to have design done. So we're going to lose a week or two in design if we decide even to go with this option after 2 weeks from now. So it's... I can't say it's a deal killer. It's just another week and a long project.
Right.
No, I was going to say that I'm moved by the comments made by Lisa and Ross and the president of Squeaky Wheels. It sounds like a good idea to let them review this. So I'm ready to make a motion, unless somebody else has got one they want to present right away.
Does this require a motion?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you want to just continue this item for a couple of weeks, is that the consensus on this run? Do you have something else you'd like to accomplish?
No, that's what I was going
to. Yeah. If that's a consensus, then we'll just continue it and talk about it at the next business meeting in 2 weeks.
That was going to be what I was, but Leif made.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is the Eagle Harbor Waterfront Park Improvement Project.
So as we've discussed previously, we have a bidder, a single low bidder for the waterfront park improvement. Last time we talked about this with council, they requested we go back and try to come up with an agreement or a solution that could potentially accommodate proceeding ahead with our project this year, as well as accommodating potentially simultaneous work on the adjacent Bainbridge Island Rowing Center building. So we have done that coordination. I can't say it's totally certain yet because the rowing club is still working on receiving the permit approvals and the authority to move forward. So the proposal tonight, as we mentioned last time, the bid that we accepted is only good really for another week or so. We could try to ask for an extension, but we are in the position to award it. The accommodation that we're proposing to allow simultaneous work this year on both projects is that we would afford the base bid for this park, which that's a layout of what all that involves, but it's a lot of landscaping, trails, new sidewalks, water feature, and then the significant intersection with the rowing club is in the upper left corner of the far west side of the park, where we have a proposed public plaza, multi-use plaza in the park on the existing tennis court, and that would butt up eventually with the rowing club, which would be built on the tennis court that they currently occupy now with outdoor storage primarily. So to proceed with our contract, the recommendation is we award the base bid for this work, and then we have a deductive alternate to if the rowing club was not able to proceed this year, we would need to finish that western edge of the plaza so that we had a finished surface so we could build against that and have a level surface. If the rowing club foundation gets built as they intend, then there won't be a need for the wall. It'll just be backfilled straight to the foundation of the rowing center building. So that's what we're counting on happening. So the recommendation is to take the deductive alternate and not award that wall and the backfill of the plaza. And then the risk there is if the project doesn't come together on the rowing center side, that we would have to go back and try to negotiate that back in. We have a pre-priced with our contractor, but things change when they become negotiated. But we'd have to come in and try to negotiate that in to finish that edge of the park if the rowing center foundation doesn't happen. So I don't think it's a huge risk. It's a $36,000 deduct. We would try to negotiate something close to that if we had to put it back in. And then also the east side of the park, upper right-hand corner of the slide there is the parking lot. That's an additional bid alternate of $28,000, and that would resurface, restripe the parking lot, put in an appropriate handy disabled stall there, and it would improve. One of the features or one of the desires of the vision of the park was to try to create a place where, during events, food trucks could potentially locate out of and have vendors. So that's a $28,000 add that we're recommending also as an alternate. And then the alternates that we're recommending not awarding are have to do with the picnic pavilion, which is in the center of the park there near the shoreline. And that's approximately with the pavilion building as well as the roof, the photovoltaic roof. That's almost a $500,000 add to the project. The other key compromise that we were able to work out with the rowing club was a location of a temporary operating space. So if they're building the foundation on the spot that they're in now, they have to move somewhere. They really can't move to that parking lot on the far east side because that's our main construction entrance and it'll be behind a fence and they would have to traipse through a park that's under construction to get to the water, and that's not going to work. So the compromise, the suggestion was to look at those four or five spots immediately adjacent or kind of above the boat ramp. So it's boat trailer parking where
people can either park their boat temporarily waiting for the availability of the ramp, or they can park their empty trailer while they're launching their boat and getting it situated before they come back and take care of their vehicle. So the rowing club can temporarily relocate there to cover the programs that they would be operating during their construction period of approximately June through August, maybe to September. So that would mean that would be a loss to the boating community. There's still boat trailer spots up on Bajun that are designated. It just means you wouldn't have that immediate access to the ramp, and you'd have to walk up the park and walk back down potentially. It's an inconvenience to the boaters, but it does solve the temporary operating location for the rowing club. So,
yeah. Any questions?
I think that's enough for now.
Barry, I have one. Go ahead. Go ahead, Wayne.
I was at the board meeting for the Bainbridge Island Senior Community Center board today, and a couple of questions came up that I know are documented, but I thought since many may be watching this, I'd help clarify. One is that the intention would be to continue to shoot for a soon after July 4th begin as possible.
Right.
Two, that the park would be closed. There will be fencing around the area where they're working and so on. And you've just said the staging area is in the east end here.
Well, that's the access point.
Access point.
But there is a dashed line around the whole perimeter of the park that you can see. That's the construction fencing. So up at the senior center, you can see most of their parking is still outside the construction fencing.
No,
so
they're not concerned, okay. I think, so much okay. their own parking, but just the traffic to and
right.
from the...
And that road in front of the senior center will have to remain open. There'll be some construction traffic from time to time, but it won't be a permanent closure.
Okay.
And they have to flag it or keep cars moving if they...
That represents yeah. the questions
okay.
from the senior center. The park district was also there and quickly wanted assurance that there'll be full access to the dock for their summer programs. And I didn't know why there wouldn't be.
Right. There will be.
And I mentioned the loss of the boat ramp parking there for the... Okay, good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Another citizen or two has written to us and asked that we don't do this during the hot summer months when they really need to make use of the park for themselves and for their dogs. And while I certainly understand the concern there, I thought I'd just ask you to say again why really the only time we can do this is in the summer.
Well, we do have a lot of limitations. Obviously, we're trying to work around the 4th of July, so we either got to do it right after the 4th of July or try to do it in the spring. The other issue we have is our construction stormwater permit from the state, and there's very, very tight restrictions on any kind of turbid water running off the site. So they have a very low threshold for that. So we try to clear the site and do that kind of work in the winter, even in the spring. We saw this year all the way through March was heavy, heavy rains. So to be safe with that, we wouldn't probably want to start until April or at the earliest, and then we'd be pushing into July 4th. So we're kind of bracketed on both sides. I'm not sure there's any, I mean, the ideal time would be obviously through the middle of the winter, but that's very tough to do to meet, you know, do a major earthwork moving job as well as meet those stormwater runoff requirements in the discharge permit. So it's unfortunate that we can't work around every limitation, but we've tried.
Last time we talked about this, we talked about some concerns related to the fact that we only got one bid, and perhaps that was
right.
because we included the pavilion, which you're not recommending that we continue with. What has been your thought process since that time about whether or not it makes sense to go out for a bid with just the civil engineering project and we might get more responses, or are you comfortable with the bid that we have at this time?
We've met with the contractor a couple times. He's been, I think, very forthcoming with his the way he put the bid together, his schedule of values, how he envisions this, the whole, how the project would be executed time-wise, the subs he's talked to, the bids he got from subs, and some that he thought were too high, so he put his own number in, those kind of things. So I'm comfortable that he that's a fair bid, and it's not unreasonable, and I think so that's a bird in hand. I guess we have a fair bid and a qualified contractor ready to do the work. Yes, maybe we could get more competition depending on when we advertised it, but that's no guarantee. And so it's more of a bird in hand thing. I think we have a reasonable contract bid and a contractor who's qualified to do the work and more than eager to do it, and has expressed a lot of cooperation, a willingness to cooperate with the rowing club contractor. And so, I mean, all indications are it's good.
Any public comment on this topic tonight?
Jennifer Ames Kerriman, president of the board for Bainbridge Island Rowing. Good evening, council. I just want to comment that we've been working really hard with the team here at the city over the last months, and very intensely, I think, for the past few weeks. And we are hopeful that we can resolve our own open items to continue this work with the park project to complete phase one of the Rowing Center. If the council decides that this will go forward on July 5th. Examples of open items are an amended lease, which we are in final review with City Attorney Lisa Marshall, and the permit to build, as Barry had mentioned, which we should have some kind of official idea of where we're at on Friday, as we've heard so far. We believe everybody's committed to these projects working together, and we are very appreciative of being involved very, I think, honestly and intensely in these two collaborative projects, because we know that as being a primary tenant of this waterfront park for the last 13 years, we look forward to having a more integrated, be more of an integrated element in the park in its entirety. It's a really legacy project, I know, for Bainbridge Island Rowing, which we will be donating this building to the city and making a permanent home after 13 years on this island, building this great, I think, community sport. And we want to serve the community for many more years and expanding the programs ongoingly. So that's our comments for this evening. Questions?
Thank you very much. Anyone else wish to comment on this topic tonight? Any further discussion from the council?
I move that the City Council approve the Eagle Harbor Waterfront Park Improvements Construction Award to Redside Construction in the base bid amount, plus alternates 3 and 4, totaling $1,610,411.15. And approve a budget amendment of $459,000 from the general fund, increasing the spending authority for this project.
I second.
Been moved and seconded. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That carries unanimously. Thank you, Barry. Next item on the agenda is the electric electric municipalization feasibility study professional services agreement. Doug.
Okay. Barry was on such a roll, I should have just left him do this one. The City Council is asked to consider two questions this evening related to the electric utility municipalization. First question is, does the City Council wish to proceed with a feasibility study to provide information that would be required for an ordinance authorizing the city to acquire the electric utility? If the City Council elects to proceed with a feasibility study, the second question is to authorize the city manager to enter into a contract with D. Hittle and Associates to conduct the study. Following interviews with D. Hittle Associates and Brown and Kaiser, the Electric Municipalization Task Force, which is made up of community members, recommended that we proceed or the council proceed with a contract awarded to D. Hiddle and Associates based on the experience of the team, the time frame for completion of work, and a cost estimate provided by D. Hiddle. Brown and Kaiser is also considered to be a very strong and experienced team, but their cost estimate was nearly twice the amount estimated by D. Hiddle. There has been discussion regarding placing an advisory measure on the ballot to ask voters if a feasibility study should be conducted. If that course of action is taken, there would be a cost of approximately $30,000 involved with that step. It should also be noted that although D. Hiddle estimated cost for the feasibility study is $99,000, it is possible that some of the tasks can be deferred until after the initial financial and economic analysis is completed. At that point, the City Council could decide if the remaining tasks should be completed. From a funding perspective, the expenses related to the feasibility study and other work related to this project are general fund expenses. However, if voters authorize the city to acquire the electric utility, these expenses could be reimbursed by the electric utility. Clearly, acquisition and operations of the electric utility is a significant decision with many unanswered questions. The objectives of renewable energy, reliability, cost-effective energy are certainly laudable and should not be lost in the quest determining whether municipalization is appropriate and a desirable path for achieving these objectives. I do have some concerns about taking a low bid approach with an assessment of this magnitude. As such, I would urge the City Council to approach this question from the perspective of seeking the most complete and accurate analysis rather than estimated cost. The cost total of the project as estimated by D. Hiddle without optional tasks 16 through 19, those tasks are provide a list of socially responsible initiatives, provide a list of synergies and other benefits, provide carbon task, risk, and cost analysis, and opine on use of municipal benefits to invest in renewables. So without those tasks, the estimated cost is $82,410. With those tasks, the total cost would be $97,620, which includes $7,500 of Gordon Thomas Honeywell legal services. So there are a couple options there if you want to look at something less than the $99,000 that is in the agenda bill. Any questions?
I'm sure there are questions.
Doug, when you say that you recommend a more detailed response, is this compliant with that directive, or is at the $82,000 level, or at least that this group, in your view, is that consistent with a low bid approach, or is this sufficiently detailed with which to make an informed decision?
I think this is certainly D. Hiddle has done a number of these studies, some that their client has proceeded with municipalization and some that the client has chosen not to proceed. I am concerned a little bit about some of the economic analysis that E. Hiddle proposed compared to what Brown and Kaiser, one of their partners, has done a considerable amount of work in economic analysis that I think is probably, if I could trade pieces from Brown and Kaiser and D. Hiddle, I would trade that piece of Brown and Kaiser's. But again, total cost of Brown and Kaiser, I think, is quite a bit higher than what at this point we really need. There's some tasks in there that I don't think they've appropriately valued. So I would say D. Hiddle is a good proposal.
I think the economic valuation is the most important piece. And I don't know why we would go with the firm that is not the one. I mean, you say you believe Brown and Kaiser is better at that. Why would we not go with Brown and Kaiser?
Brown and Kaiser has a sub that they would be using for that piece. That's why I said that if I could switch out that piece, I would suggest that. I wouldn't suggest going totally with the Brown and Kaiser proposal. There may be an option that as we move into the feasibility study with D. Hiddle, we can look at the work that I think it's EQL, if I remember right, is the name of the sub. We could potentially ask them to come in and either do a review of the economic piece that D. Hiddle puts together or supplement that with their own work.
Doug, I'm curious as to whether or not there was a strong consensus on the among the task force members as to the choice of D. Hiddle versus Brown and Kaiser.
Yes, there was.
And did the members of that task force comment on D. Hiddle's economic capabilities, economic analysis capabilities?
I think in general, the task force felt that D. Hiddle's experience and qualifications were high.
So, we hear that they prefer D. Hiddle, but there's nothing in our packet that tells us why other than they just conclude they're more experienced.
Well, so the task force members reviewed all the proposals that we received. They went through interviews with Brown and Kaiser and D. Hiddle, where a number of questions were asked about the experience and qualifications of the team members. And based on that, I think the individual members of the task force each commented, and D. Hiddle was the consensus recommendation from that task force.
Are there any task force members here?
I did see some earlier. I think we have a couple here.
Can we hear from them?
It's up to you if they're willing to.
It's probably up to them.
Good evening. My name is Winifred Perkins. I live at 10120 Northeast Garibaldi Loop on Bainbridge, and I was a member or am a member of the task force. And I'd be willing to answer any of your questions or give you my own personal thoughts about the process, whatever you had in mind.
I'd love to hear your personal thoughts.
Okay. I come from a long history of working in the electric power industry. I've had over 35 years directly employed in that industry. And I think this process is very noble. I think it's a very ambitious undertaking. I have grave concerns about sort of, as I would call it, separating from the mothership in this case being PSE. And my concerns are not so much from a environmental or social point of view, but really from a reliability point of view. I feel like we're very vulnerable on this island. And although there are other alternatives and greener alternatives, I do believe that PSE offers all of us as ratepayers an opportunity to buy green power. You can elect to do that or not. And I'm not sure if we're quite at the technological point of readiness for that sort of transition. And by that I mean, I think it's very important and significant that the city of Bainbridge has now been recognized by EPA as 100% producer of green power. But the problem is that there are a whole bunch of technologies like battery storage and things like that that are literally within, I would say, 3 to 5 years of becoming extremely commonplace and available to residential and small and even medium-sized commercial users. Whereas right now, if we were really to embark on this process, I'm not sure what we would really get. We would get perhaps Tier 1 power from Bonneville, but that in itself isn't a guarantee, and the availability of water is always a risk. And so, I mean, I really think it should be a more evaluated and structured and detailed sort of process, and certainly don't think debating whether we proceed or not proceed, or you put it on the ballot or you don't put it on the ballot, should be decided by something like a $20,000 or $30,000 or even $100,000 cost difference. This endeavor will end up costing the island and the island residents somewhere over $100 million. So we really have an opportunity here to study it further. I'm not a fan of coal. I don't like coal strip or Navajo plant or any of those plants either. I happen to work for the largest single developer of wind and solar in the country. But I don't think we're quite ready to just make that separation.
You have a question?
Yes.
You're very experienced, and I think you have a grasp of what's important for us to know moving forward. Can I ask, is it your opinion that Dee Hiddle's the appropriate consultant to answer those questions?
I certainly believe that they have a lot of expertise. I don't know. I don't feel 100% confident with them. No, I don't, because we only had an opportunity really to speak with them for about they spoke with us for about an hour. We had a chance to listen to them for about 20 or 30 minutes and then ask questions. If I was in your shoes and I was really looking at this from a really, holistic perspective, and considering that this may be in a single largest financial purchase that the island will have ever made, I think I'd want to do a little more in-depth study. I would want more information. I would want a better understanding of exactly what we're going to get into.
And do you think Brown and Kaiser would provide that, or and one of the other consultants?
No, I think it's we really need a lot more. We need a better understanding of really what we've got here. We had, I think, 12 or so people, or I don't remember exactly how many were on the task force, Doug, but 16, but we only had really 3 or 4 months to work on this issue. I just don't think it's quite ripe. I don't think it's ready for prime time yet. And this is something that, you can't make a mistake on this. Making a mistake on this is not just money down the drain. It's also people whose livelihoods are at stake, people whose health are at stake if they don't have power. There's just so many consequences to bear in mind that I just think it's something that you want to take a little bit slower. And I know that Island Power has been very diligent in identifying the benefits of carbon-free power, and I think that's great, but that's not the only issue that's facing you as you make a decision like this.
So when you say it's not ripe, is there more the city should be doing before we go ahead with a consultant? Or is a consultant the next step?
You're just asking my own personal opinion. My own personal opinion is that I think I'm not sure that the residents of Bainbridge have really even begun to understand what this really is. And I'm not sure if you put something on the ballot, what that would really look like. Would it be basically just asking people if they wanted to have a municipal utility? I don't know if people really understand it. There really needs to be, in my opinion, if I was to do it, there needs to be some outreach, some kind of effort to help people understand what it is they might or might not be getting into, and what does it mean, and what are the risks, and what are the benefits. I just don't think a consultant for $100,000 is going to be able to provide enough really tangible assurance that the people are going to get what they really think they're going to get. Does that help?
It does.
Okay.
My name is Len Korsland, and I live at 10400 Beechcrest Drive. I had 32 years in working with the municipality of the city of Seattle and their power company. I'm more on the operational end of the things, what it takes to do a daily operation, where it takes to have a warehouse, trucks, operations center. I think, I don't know how big the fire department is and police department, but I think your city light department would be your biggest department that you have. Finding a place to house trucks, a warehouse, and those kinds of things really haven't been discussed much. And one of the, I think it was Brown Kaiser, they're developing one of these operations centers kind of things for Mason County. I think the reason I kind of went with Hiddle in my choice was of their schedule. They can meet your July 8th, I think it was, time frame without doing a few of those things that were on the RFP. So they could give you the information you needed to push it forward if that's what you wanted to do. I think Brown and Kaiser, they didn't have that, if I remember correctly, they couldn't meet that time frame. But my personal opinion is it's a big chunk, and I think to move rapidly on this, we just need more time to think about what it really is we're doing here in the way of space and people and all those kind of decisions that you'll have to make down the line. So.
I have a question for either one of you, or maybe both of you, and that is, if we're not trying to decide at this point whether to put this on the ballot, at least from my standpoint, trying to gather information in order to be able to make that decision. And so understanding that it's only a step in the process, is hiring a consultant at this time the right step in order to gather more information, in order to educate ourselves and perhaps educate the public?
I think it is the logical next step, but I'm not sure that these things sort of get their own momentum on them. I mean, you know what? You've been through this before, I'm sure. Once people think that you're starting to spend money, and this is real money. I mean, $100,000 is, it's not $100 million like what this is ultimately going to end up costing us, but it's real money. And then they sort of get a life of their own. And maybe you know, we're all ready for that, and we're ready to really look at this report and be able to use it to make some really wise decisions. But it's there's just a lot of unknowns, I think, and I kind of feel like I want to caution you a little bit, because when you get this 40 or 50 page report, and even if it has some economics in it, the industry is changing so quickly today that what we read in 2016 isn't necessarily going to be applicable in 2018 or 2025. And, you know, some of the logical issues that Glenn brings up about, you know, workers and trucks and, you know, what happens if we have a major issue like an earthquake and we lose access to the peninsula, and how are we going to get people here, and how quickly can they repair things? And, you know, those are all questions that I think have to be really thought through very, very carefully.
Were those questions that were supposed to be or are supposed to be answered by the analysis of accompanying?
No, I think Hiddle's going to really focus primarily on some of the engineering features, but also on primarily the economics. And then it's mostly economics, I think. Economics and engineering and reliability issues and that sort of thing. I don't even think they're going to get, maybe I'm wrong, Doug, but I don't think they're going to really get into determining what alternatives to power sources are going to be. I mean, we have talked amongst ourselves about this Bonneville Power Administration Tier 2 or Tier 1 power, but we haven't really confirmed any of that, and we haven't confirmed if it's even, you know, readily available for us at this time. So there's a lot of unknowns.
What did you understand was going to be included within the ambit of operational risk, which is one of the tasks we've asked to be analyzed?
Operational risk? You mean like tree trimming and undergrounding and those kinds of things, and transmission access? I think those are all the kinds of things that D. Hiddle was going to look at.
I think Doug has some.
So the proposal that D. Hiddle submitted is in your packet, and within there's a description of the work they would do under each task that we asked them to evaluate. And they will be looking at defining electrical facilities to be acquired, constructed, identifying applicable severance issues, that's, you know, issues at the boundary between the new utility and PSE system, assessing the existing distribution facilities, defining BPA power and transmission issues. So that would be part of the work they would do to evaluate if that tier one is actually something that's available to us. Defining energy efficiency programs. This is where we'd be looking at distributed generation, demand response resources, estimate of costs, benefits, and impacts of those programs, comparing the estimated results of PSE programs with the estimated results of what a city utility might be providing, identifying options and costs for operation. This is where we get into some of those questions. And then, of course, the estimated original cost less depreciation of the facility, providing the economic analysis of the municipal utility. So we have a number of steps in here that would address some of the questions that have been raised here this evening.
Thank you.
Okay, I just wanted to point out one other thing. The representative from DHITL also pointed out some of this information is not going to be readily available. And just that's just the reality of the situation.
Thank you very much for your comments tonight, and thank you for your service on the task force. We just wait 1 second. Is there anything else before we receive public comment? Yes, sir. Go ahead.
My name is Dave McKenzie. I'm at 450 Wood Avenue on Bainbridge. Have been here for about 19 years. I just stumbled to this issue when I read the Bainbridge Review, and I started talking to some of my friends, and they all said, the city council is doing what? And I go, well, I'm going to go to the meeting to try to find that out. But noodle this on the back of an envelope. How much revenue are we talking about, and what are the expenses? And I did a simple back of the envelope that said, if my monthly bill is $120 a month times 12 months, that's $1,440 a month. Multiply that times roughly 16,000 customers on the island. That says that this island generates $23 million in revenues for Puget Sound Energy. Whether that's an accurate figure or not, I don't know. I then went and looked at Seattle Public Lighting, or Seattle City Lighting. They have $905 million in revenues, and they make about $93 million. So they have a 10% profit margin. So if you said, for some reason, a local dinky, small utility in an industry that's a huge industry could make a 10% profit margin, and then you had to float a bond issue for $100 million to buy out this plant, and if you borrowed the money at 4%, that's $4 million a year in interest charges. Then you'd have to have a sinking fund of probably 5% a year for a 20-year bond issue. That's another $5 million. So 4 and 5 is $9 million of cash that's going out the door, and you allegedly make $2.3 million. And that's assuming that all of the stuff that is provided by Puget Sound Energy in out of Bellevue, billing, transmission, design, reliability, and all the things that they do over there that we don't do over here for ourselves in the maintenance department, it boggles my imagination that we're actually thinking about this. And the lady that was here, I mean, she's saying, you know, the industry's changing. This is premature. Sit back and take a breath here before we waste $100,000. Now, the other thing is, it's sort of being sold on green issues, and we won't have Coldstrip. Well, Puget Sound Energy gets their power from 25% hydro, 25% natural gas, 25% coal, and probably some diesel generators and, you know, maybe 5% wind power. That all comes into a central station. It's kind of like a bathtub, and when the water fills up, it sort of goes out in various pipes. You may think that you're buying hydropower only, and you may get some special rate for hydropower, but it's just whatever's coming off the system, and they can't do it. So, and you don't generate power here, you don't make power here, it all comes up the transmission lines up the Kitsap Peninsula, and I saw a sign that says stop. So I think it's just way premature.
Thank you, sir.
Doug Rao, 12266 Kenneth Place. I agree with the previous speaker wholeheartedly. I'm here tonight to ask the City Council not to take a vote on hiring a consultant to study buying PSE assets until after the South Ward Council members have had an opportunity to hear their constituents at the South Ward meeting in 4 days. The South Ward constituents' voice have not been heard by their council members and the island-wide council members, while the North and Central Ward Council members have heard their constituents' concerns concerning the study. A motion to vote on a consultant should be taken up at the next business meeting in 2 weeks on the 24th May of 2016. This would allow time for the City Council members to discuss what they've heard at all the ward meetings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Council, I'm Barry Peters, Vineyard Lane. I'm a retiree on the island, and I'm a member of Island Power. And I first want to thank you for the open public process that you folks have been conducting, many of you for the better part of a year. And tonight, I think the key question is, what is a timely next step in a public process that you've been engaging in? Many of you have attended meetings where you were treated to the views of experts, people who are actually doing public power in places like Ellensburg. Many of you have met the chief executive officer of Bonneville, who gave rather authoritative answers to some of the questions that citizens have raised tonight. And I really appreciate that part of this public process was choosing citizen volunteers, and you heard from a couple of them. But let me emphasize that there are 14 other citizen volunteers that you didn't hear from tonight. And many of them were among the strong advocates for proceeding with an impartial next step at this time. I think all of us in the city, yourselves included, are entitled to hearing expert opinions and not just have either my opinion with perhaps my bias or another citizen who maybe has done a back-of-the-envelope calculation. There are just so many facts involved, and HIDL is equipped to handle them. I was proud of our city when I attended the meeting of your task force a couple of weeks ago. They deliberated for nearly 3 hours, met with both of the proponents. So to me, this is the kind of public process that deserves a timely next step of actually doing a feasibility study. No, this isn't prime time for a decision either by you or by the citizens as to whether we should form a public utility, even though there are 62 other public utilities in cities and counties around Washington that we have as examples, and only three are investor-owned. So there are examples out there. So I'm here to urge that we take a timely next step so that we have impartial information and not just off-the-cuff thoughts on one side or the other of the issue. I think we deserve to hear feasibility information and also opportunities. Let me give you an example of thinking about opportunities, the roof of this building. 6 years ago, the council learned of a new state program to put solar panels, community solar, and we did this at no cost to the taxpayer. We looked at that opportunity, and we were able to achieve it. I think a feasibility study will enable us to see many other opportunities that we would have with local control over our power.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, you came in after we set the ground rules, which were that you get one bite at the apple. You took a small bite, so if you could limit it to a couple minutes, that'd be great.
I will do that. And my comment is a very limited one, and I'm going to play to the lawyers on the council and as a lawyer myself. One of the issues that's very, very important going forward, whenever the feasibility study is prepared and whether the city goes ahead with this effort, is the regulatory review, the legal review, and the legal involvement. I can attest to, from experience, how complicated these issues are. I'm very concerned that if the council decides to send this back for another look at either Brown and Kaiser or Hiddle, that the lawyers that look at this, that their fee structure is identified, what they're going to perform is identified, how much is it going to cost, what tasks are they going to be working on. I'm not personally 100% convinced that that work has been done yet, so I urge the council to keep those issues under consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is John Ogden. By now you know where I stand on this issue in opposition to moving forward. I was so impressed with this lady that served on this task force, largely because she reiterated some of the things I said a few weeks ago. This is the first step on a slippery slope. But the point she made about the time to take to evaluate this, I don't know why Island Power wants to move so quickly. We've seen from Jefferson, it's going to be 4 to 6 years even if the vote takes place. So can't we take a little more time in the public to talk about this? I realize I'm a little biased, but everybody I talk to say the same thing as this other gentleman. What are they thinking about? This is a huge decision with great impact, and I come with 20-plus years in the utility industry. I look at these bids. I can't believe it. 5 bids, we take the cheapest. We take the cheapest. I talked about this from the very beginning. That's representation of how we'll handle the utility business. We not only take the cheapest, but we take the outfit that did Jefferson, which sorely underestimated the total impact of what it was going to cost by over $60 million, 150%. And we're not only taking the cheapest, but the guy that put that together. Can't we take a little more time on this issue in the community and talk about this a little bit more? I think there should be some discussions going on with pros and cons on both sides. There are people in this community that have private utility business and public utility business. And it's just amazing to me that we would consider this. And in addition to that, they take the most qualified one that everybody agreed to and said they cost too much money. This is a huge decision, as she was pointing out. It shouldn't be taken lightly. We're worried about $30,000 of putting the vote on the election, and we're talking about a $100 million tab. This is important, and it ought to be taken with a little bit more credence in terms of its impact. And I'm going to hit this one last thing. I know you got 1,200 signatures, and you felt some impression that you needed to do something with these 1,200 signatures. At the same time, we talked a couple of weeks ago, it was mentioned about initiatory versus referendum city. If this would have been initiatory, it would have required twice that many signatures. And guess what? When it went to the ballot, the people that did the initiatory effort would have had to pay for the study and bring forth the thing. If you just want numbers, let's go to the ballot. These numbers are not going to help us from this particular consultant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Tom Goodlin. I live on 10257 Darden Lane. I'm here to speak in favor of the city selecting a consultant to evaluate the public power utility for Bainbridge Island The consultant study I see as necessary for the City Council and Islanders to have complete information available to evaluate the potential for public power utility. And I'm pleased to hear that qualified firms are available to respond to all the questions in the RFP at costs within the anticipated range and quite possibly much less than had been anticipated. Reading letters and listening to others here tonight, there appear to be a number of misperceptions in the community regarding infrastructure purchase and startup costs. I've heard others say that there could be a $100 million plus bond required to be paid by taxpayers. Well, this is incorrect, as there would be a ratepayer bond paid through electrical bills, not new taxes. As I have stated previously to the council, or shared previously with the council, we did not expect a bond in the $100 million range, is perhaps half that for infrastructure purchase and startup costs. Also, our premise is that the bond could be paid for by maintaining rates that would be equal to or less than rates paid to PSE due to the very low electricity costs when buying from Bonneville Power Administration. However, it is important to complete a study conducted by experts in order to test these suppositions. I look forward to informed and factual discussions that can be the outcome of completing the study. Thank you.
Any other comment on this subject?
Hi, my name is Randall Samstag. I live on Agate Pass Loop, and I'm on the Steering Commission Committee for Island Power. You know, we've got a he said, she said thing here. On the PSE side and the PSE surrogates here in the room, Jeff PUDU is a mess. It's going to cost you more than $2 million there in budget deficit. On the Island Power side, we see that they're actually paying a lower rate at Jeff PUD. There's 62 public power utilities in Washington State that are paying, on average, about 25% less than we're paying now at PSE. We've heard that from the PSE side that BPA is running out of hydro and that they'll end up using fossil fuel power. We understand, and we heard from the BPA administrator that if they don't have the hydropower, they are committed to getting green power to replace it. We've heard from many people here that this is too big a project for this little town to do. We look at these 62 little towns in this state that are doing exactly this. Clearly, somebody is projecting misinformation here. And the cure for misinformation is information. And I think you're doing the right thing here to acquire the services of an independent expert on these issues. I think this is the right step to do. And I'd urge you to go forward. And I applaud you for the effort that you've made so far. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Elaine Davis. I live at 156 Hall Brothers Loop. I want to support the previous speakers voicing concerns over pursuing municipal energy here on Bainbridge. Spending $100,000 to study taking over Puget Sound Energy's facilities and gaining access to hydroelectric power from the Bonneville Power Administration, in my view, is looking backward. I've spent about the last 20 years looking at municipalization research and policy analysis in Washington State and across the country. I've spent most of my career in utility analysis. Hydro resources in the Northwest won't grow in the future. They may, in fact, decline if there are additional dams that are removed from the Columbia Snake River system. It's a closed system. There's only so much hydropower that will be there. By purchasing energy from BPA, we're contributing exactly nothing to developing new renewable energy sources or addressing climate change to the extent that renewables will affect it. We could be studying what's involved in purchasing renewable futures at discounted rates today through community aggregated purchasing and then have PSE deliver those renewable purchases across their lines. By doing so, we would be making a net contribution to developing renewable resources. But this option is not part of the current scope of work being considered by DHITL, and I urge you to slow down. I believe that the Council and all of us as residents need a better understanding of how to participate in the future of renewable energy. You can't get the right answers if you don't ask the right questions, and I don't believe we have the right questions yet, and I don't believe that the scope of work that they're using is going to help you very much. Rather than spending $100,000 and getting stuck, paying a second time for the capital facilities on Bainbridge Island, the ratepayers that we've already paid for these capital facilities will be, we want to begin to look for ways to contribute to reducing to climate change, not just buying some facilities that we've already paid for. This is what Island Power, in my initial, when I was at the initial meetings with Island Power, what I understood the advocates to want was to pursue renewable energy, and that's not what this proposal is going that it's going to do that we're considering here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else?
I have one comment I'd like to make, because this has been information that I think has been shared in a number of different discussions regarding the DHITL study in Jefferson County and their estimated value of that system. And this, if we do choose to go forward, I think is something that does need to be clarified so that the confusion doesn't continue throughout the process. What DHITL was asked to do in Jefferson County in their feasibility study, I would say, is very similar to what the county assessor does for property here on the island. They assign a value to that property. Well, if your property is valued by the assessor at a certain dollar amount, that doesn't necessarily mean that's what you're going to sell it for, especially if you're not a willing seller. And that's really what happened in Jefferson County. DHITL provided them with exactly what they asked for. What's the value of PSE's assets in Jefferson County? The actual acquisition cost, we know, was about double that. WUTC also got involved in that situation and said, you know what, Jefferson County paid more than what the value of the assets are. PSE gets to keep that money, but it shouldn't benefit the shareholders. It should benefit the ratepayers. So there was a credit to ratepayers of PSE for essentially the difference between what DHITL valued the assets and what Jefferson PUD ended up paying.
I'll just add a comment from my perspective. We've on the Jefferson PUD question. There's been a lot of discussion of that. I did put in a call to them earlier this week to speak with them, and they are willing to speak with us. And you know, I have an interest in kind of going out there and talking to them. It's one of the things I was going to say today is, you know, if two council members would come with me and kind of drive over there and talk to them about what their experience is. At least in my conversation that I had with the folks there, that there was a satisfaction with the result of the process. Now, admittedly, I'm talking to a commissioner, but their experience was that it's been a positive one. And not that I would take that at face value, but I think this data point of Jefferson County is something that we need to really understand better in this process. And it's been reflected both as a parade of horribles and a success story. And I expect there's some of both in there, because it is a complicated thing, but it's certainly something that my expectation is in this process is that we're going to understand better what they went through and you know, what their reflections on that, what they might have done differently, and what they continue to believe that that was a good project.
So you all know I don't think this is a good idea. Not for the reasons people want to do it. I just don't think it's something that the city of Bainbridge should be doing. But I do believe we need to have the best feasibility report we can get. And what I'm hearing is we're choosing D. Hiddle because he's the cheapest. He can get it done in time to get it on a November ballot. There's a third reason I can't remember. But it... Oh, and Doug, you have said it's really important to you to have a report that's not biased, that really sets out the facts. And I know that you heard things from these two consultants during their interviews that you thought were, you know, backwards from your impressions going into it. But I'm concerned that D. Hiddle is not an unbiased consultant. And I don't think we should go with the cheapest option. I think we should go with what's going to get us the best information. You've said that they have the best attorney working for them in this area, and you think they have the best person doing the economic analysis. I don't understand the choice here.
So I'm carrying forward the task force recommendation to you. That was their recommendation. I do have reservations about D. Hiddle compared to Brown and Kaiser. As I stated, they're about twice the cost. But I also explained that I don't think that should be the factor in making the decision. And I think the council has also stated on a number of occasions, or at least consistently, that the timing of this isn't what the council wants to use to drive the decision either. And there is certainly interest with Island Power to have this on the ballot in November. I'm concerned that if we don't have real good, accurate information, as thorough as we can find, that we just may end up in a situation that we're asking council to make a decision to put this on the ballot and asking community members to vote on something with not all the information that we could have.
I'm leaning towards voting to authorize the study, not because I believe the city is ready to municipalize the electric utility. I don't know whether or not it's a good idea. I think that the efforts of Island Power and others in the community to gather information and to put forward this idea have raised very good questions and suggested some possibly very legitimate benefits, both in terms of climate and economics and collateral benefits, like the possibility of fiber optic networks that could be delivered to the houses. All those are interesting ideas and good ideas. On the other side, we've heard very legitimate and important questions raised about operational risks and economics. These are complex questions. And this is not a discussion that's on fast forward or any kind of a fast track. It's something that we've been talking about for a year and a half, both through community meetings and here in council chambers. And last year when this came up, I was sort of the mindset initially that, gosh, we ought to take the temperature of the voters before we do any kind of a study. After the council talked about that, I was convinced by public comment and colleagues on the council that really that doesn't make much sense. That what makes more sense, rather than taking that intermediate step and incurring a $30,000 cost, is to form a citizens task force, which was done, and the task force that was pulled together had a very impressive range of people with varying qualifications, many with experience in the power industry, both in private power and in public power, and others with different perspectives from business and economics. And it's the kind of community task force that I think speaks of a very good process. So if I vote, and I'm inclined to vote for study, it's not because I think we should head down any slippery slope. On the contrary, I'm saying the study needs to be for the benefit of making sure we don't slide down either slope, that we take the time to gather information, think it through carefully as a council, as a community. I will not support putting it on a ballot unless I think it's a legitimate proposal to take to the city, take to the community, and that we have enough available information out there for voters to make an informed choice. And I will not be bound by a November timeframe if we don't feel that we have that information. But I think after a year and a half of talking about this, about the community input that we received, the work that's done by the task force, I'm inclined to accept the recommendation of the task force and gather the information. And then I'd love the input from the community and members of that task force as to whether the study withstands the scrutiny, whether it delivers the information we need. And if it doesn't, I'm going to be saying put on the brakes. Either we do more study or we say it's not time, we don't move forward. But that's where I am right now.
Well, so far we've discussed the technical side of this, a little bit the political aspect, but I would like to focus a little bit on the political side of this. In order to, for this to ever be a possibility, we're going to need buy-in from the community. I've been listening to community members. I've been to two ward meetings, and my sense is that about 25% of the people who know about this support it, and about 75% of the people don't support it. I would like to see it on the ballot. I think it's a worthwhile issue to be discussed. I think putting it on the ballot now is a recipe for a sequel to the Prop 1 ballot measure that went down by 75% to 25% last November. We need to have a two-step process. We need a vote just to see how Islanders feel about the general concept of possibly taking over the electric utility on the island. If Islanders somehow, and I don't expect that they would, approve that, we need to have a really good study. And I would be inclined not to take the cheapest one, but to look for the most qualified consultants to conduct that study, because it's very important that we get good information. But I don't think Islanders need a whole lot of information right now to make a decision as to whether or not they favor the city taking over our electric utility. Frankly, what I'm hearing from Islanders is that most people are really frightened by the idea of Bainbridge Island city government taking over our electric utility, that they don't trust the city to run an electric utility. And until we inspire more confidence in the community, I think we're going to be wasting money with a study. So I want to make it really clear that I don't favor spending any money on a feasibility study until we know we have buy-in from the community.
No, I prefer to take a leadership role in this, which is I've been elected. I have representative responsibilities, and I think we need to continue on our track as a council to be as well informed as we can be, and then to engage in community dialogue. What I've been troubled with from the beginning is this notion of a ballot in November, because I've had this fear that even if we had a broad support for this, many people saying we should go forward, I'm not certain in the time we have between now and August, when it would have to be go to the ballot, we as a council, would be well enough informed to be confident about any ordinance we would put forth. Here's a scenario, irrespective of who we select to do the feasibility study. By the way, I support going forward with the feasibility study. What if it comes back and we feel 80% persuaded, but there are still some very big questions? Well, now we've missed our deadline. So what do we do? Do we say, well, let's go again? I feel that we need to abandon this notion that November is going to drive the process. I feel that there's already some support for that, because I do not feel we can get this done. I'm very impressed by the notion that we are moving very fast. I believe that to be true, and I'm extremely in doubt about our ability to be well-informed and to get a majority vote in support of an ordinance in the time we have, no matter how efficient HITL can be and get it back to us. So I would like to move forward with the understanding it may go to the ballot, but that I'm quite interested in being fully informed, as fully informed as I can be. I'm not convinced this is the right thing for the city to do. I do feel that we can be leaders in this, and it doesn't mean we're going to get the best ballot outcome. I would remind my colleague who was not here for Prop 1, we did do due diligence on that. We might have fumbled in how we communicated it, but we did have a 7-0 vote to take that police bond to the citizens. It went down for any number of reasons, but it wasn't because we didn't do good work, study the alternatives, and pick a preferred site that at the time was the best information we had. I doubt we're going to get to a 7-0 place on this. That would be desirable, but that we're going to be able to get that kind of achievement in the time to meet an August deadline. So I want to move forward. I'll defer to the task force and others as to who does it, the feasibility study. I support the motion as it's the proposed motion. But I feel like we carried it this far. We need to say definitively yes or no as a council, not have any doubts or feel pressured to move forward.
Go ahead, Ron.
I'd like to respond to my esteemed colleague on some of those issues. I think the primary responsibility in being informed for council members is to listen to the community, because regardless of whether we do a feasibility study or not, this is going to be up to the community of Bainbridge Island to decide if we're going to have an electric utility. I've been listening to people. I don't know how carefully you've been listening, but I'm hearing people who are getting very upset about the possibility of us spending money on a feasibility study without them having a say. And regarding the Prop 1, council obviously didn't do its job. When you have a measure that fails 75% to 25%, and you had alternatives to creating a city campus here that were recommended by a stakeholders group and were supported by the community, as evidenced by a survey conducted by the fire department, I don't think you have the right to say that you did your job and you presented a good proposal. And I'm just concerned this council hasn't learned from that failure, and you're going to repeat it with this feasibility or this with this issue. Listen to the community and listen to what they're telling us, because we have an obligation to do that, to really listen and hear what people are saying.
Roger?
Well, that went a direction I wasn't prepared for. I don't think that a Prop 1 discussion is a constructive one in this context, and I appreciate that that's our last thing that we've taken. And I'm not sure, Ron, your information is entirely correct, or at least doesn't share my experience having been here. But the result of the election was undeniable, and that is. But let's talk about the issue that before us. I support an informed debate. I think that what we're having here is a debate that is based on inconsistent information, and we want that neutrality of information. So I think to go out and you know, this sort of Facebook poll or, you know, there's not enough information available to a voter today, to any of us today, to make a decision about whether this is a good idea or not. There is enough information to say that this has the potential for providing a lot of benefits. And we have an obligation to make sure that record is developed so that we can, and you know, we've spent $100,000 several times today. And so it is not such an exceptional event in the city council's budgeting process that we wouldn't go out and do a study and be informed. I agree with the sentiments of I have been generally supportive of the idea of a November ballot because it is, we'll get higher turnout. We will have a more representative reflection of what the community feels. But if it's too fast, it is a big decision, and so you know, I don't feel a need to push towards that result. I do feel like it is our responsibility to evaluate whether this has the potential for being a, you know, there's enough of an idea here that we need to get more information and get that more information and then put it out to the voters. And that's the approach that I support. And I don't, but I think there have been a lot of good discussions here, and I'm happy to continue to have this discussion. I think it's helpful for us. There's a lot of misinformation, and you know, I really respect Sarah's approach of, look, you know, right now I don't think this is a great idea, but I do think it's a good idea to know exactly what we're getting into with this eyes as wide open as possible.
Well, that's not my preferred approach. Ron and I must hang out in the same circles because he's hearing the same thing I am. So Wayne, I take leadership differently than you. I don't need to spend $100,000, $200,000 of our taxpayers' money to find out something I don't think is a good idea. And I don't think people want it. I don't think we should be doing it. And that's money that can be spent elsewhere. And you can't compare the $200,000 on a feasibility study to patching roads.
Well, that's fair enough.
On. And then I think what some of my colleagues I know are going to feel differently than me, but what reality is to me is that it doesn't matter. The green power doesn't matter. What it's going to cost doesn't matter. What this feasibility study is going to determine doesn't matter. There are people on this island who just plain and simply do not trust the city to do this. And no matter what the study shows, they're not going to support it because they don't trust the city to do it.
So there are those people. And there are people who are enthusiastically in support of this idea. And we heard collectively from them last year. I expect that a number of them are having second thoughts and want to know more whether or not the petition that they signed is something that they really, at the end of the day, want. Asking people to vote on whether or not we provide them with more information seems to me to completely miss the purpose of having a vote, and that is to have informed voters voting on an issue. On the subject of timing, there's no question in my mind that we can't do our work, that we can do our work in time to have this on a November ballot. And this study is one thing. I mean, we've had no discussions at all about governance, about how you would set this up, how it would operate from a governmental standpoint. We've had no discussion about the logistics impacts that one of our commenters commented on, where you put things and what kind of things you have to put where. And all those things are going to be things that we're going to need to know about in order to make an informed decision as to whether or not this passes the sniff test and goes on the ballot, and obviously things that the voters need to know if they have to vote on it. So I'm supportive of going ahead. I'm happy to accept the recommendation of the task force as to the consultant. I don't think that it's necessarily a perfect solution. But I think that based on the information that we've gotten from the consultants and the reaction of the task force to their interviews, that we will get information sufficient to inform ourselves and the voters. We may need more information later, but
I would would like to hear more from the task force why they chose D. Hiddle. Our city manager has reservations. The only reason I heard, I mean, granted, there's only two members here tonight, but one vote in support was because of the timing. And so I, if we're going to go forward, I would like to hear more from the task force why they chose D. Hiddle, especially given the fact that our city manager may not completely agree with that. And so, as he said, this is the task force recommendation, but he's been involved in this process all along.
Do you have a proposal as to how to accomplish that?
I guess it would require some sort of report from the task force.
It would require some sort of action from the city council. Do you have something in mind?
You want a motion to request that you get a report?
I don't want anything. I just wonder if you have anything to offer.
I have something.
You know, I'm not a motion maker.
I have a whole lot I could say about this, and I agree with a whole lot of things that have been said tonight, but the thing that has stuck in my head the most is what Winifred, I think if I have your name right, said about this is the most important decision the city might ever make or for a long time, and we should really take our time on this. I'm also stuck, like Sarah, on whether it's possible that the task force made the recommendation it made because it felt that one of the parameters we had put on this was we must have this done by a certain deadline in July so that we can get this on the November ballot. And I, in particular, I have no care about whether we get this on the November ballot or whatever ballot. I just care that we have the most informed process possible. So I wonder if we took that parameter off, if we were to agree tonight that we don't care if this makes it to the November ballot necessarily or not, that's not a parameter for the task force to consider, and we sent this back to the task force, if that would change their recommendation at all. And maybe you have a thought about that, Doug.
I would be happy to have that discussion with the task force. I think, you know, any additional information, input from the council will be helpful for them. It may give them a different perspective on the recommendation they made. So,
and we're not looking for the cheapest.
Right.
So, I guess I could ask if there's consensus that we not take any action tonight, but ask Doug to reconvene the task force and discuss this further in light of the concerns expressed about the basis for their making the recommendation they made. If there's no consensus about that, then we need to do something different.
I think people are nodding. It would give the South Ward people a chance, too, to have our meeting.
I'd love to have another opportunity to express my opinion on this subject. So if that would give us another meeting to talk about this, that'd be great.
We wouldn't want to deprive you of that opportunity.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. So we'll ask Doug to go back to the task force and report further. Okay, thank you. We now have the consent agenda.
I move the city council approve consent agendas A through D as presented in the agenda packet.
Second. I moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
There's something in the minutes that needs to be corrected.
Let's back up then. This is Bob's rules instead of Robert's rules. So if you could identify for the clerk.
I think there is something in the minutes that needs to be corrected, if I can find it here. Anyone know offhand what page the minutes finally come in at?
Which day?
Okay, on page 164, page 5 of the minutes, page 164 in our packet, and maybe no correction is needed, but So this is item B, proposed neighborhood matching grant update. It shows two motions. Is that the correct way to do that? That we made a motion and we approved it, and then we made an amended motion and approved that also? We actually show both motions on there? Okay. So we know that really the first motion has no weight. It has no effect. It's really only the second motion that matters.
So we're moved and seconded on the consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The consent agenda is adopted. We have three committee reports included in the agenda packet. Does anybody have anything they want to add or other reports they'd like to make orally?
I do. I know this is well out of our range of importance at the moment, but we still have this ongoing Suzuki discussion. And so the ETAC committee now will be meeting for the fourth time on Monday to further refine its recommendations, which will come to the council. They almost got there at our meeting yesterday, but decided they wanted to go one more round just to refine specifically the important points about what an environmental assessment would be. So I wanted you to know that that's, I think last week I said it was going to, we'd be seeing it. It'll be sometime later this week that they'll present it to you, Mr. Mayor.
Thanks. Anything else?
Did we get to the order?
Not quite yet. We'll get there. Let's look at upcoming council meeting agendas.
Okay, next week at your study session, you have three items on the agenda for council discussion. First item is the Islandwood property non-motorized trail. Second issue is the initiative and referendum powers discussion. And then the third issue is the summer meeting schedule. We have moved the discussion on the police facility out into June for a number of reasons. One, gathering more information, but also I will not be in attendance at the May 17th meeting. The chief and I are going to be attending a seminar on police facility planning. So we hope to gain some good information there before we come back and talk with the council about police facility planning. Looking at the May 24th business meeting, we have the Sakai Trail and Murden Cove Watershed Assessment Presentation. Closed record hearing on Resolution 2016-12, that's the Torvanger Final Subdivision. Resolution 2016-11, concerning the use of neonicotinoid pesticides in the city of Bainbridge Island. That's actually a joint resolution with several other of the taxing jurisdictions on the island, Bainbridge Fire District, School District, Park and Recreation District. Then we have Ordinance 2016-06, revising aquaculture regulations as a limited amendment of the Shoreline Master Program. That'll be the first reading, and we'll be asking the council to schedule a public hearing. Procurement procedures. Sound to Olympic Trail Phase 2 and 4. Trail lease. Resolution number 2016-15, revisions to the planning administrative manual. This is related to the tree and vegetation regulations. Resolution 2016-10, amending the fee schedule. Item you move forward this evening, the Mountain View Road Drainage Improvement Project Award and Budget Amendment. election of the deputy mayor for June through December 2016. Ordinance 2016-8 relating to first quarter 2016 budget adjustments.
I'm sorry, Doug. So the deputy mayor, it's June to December, it's not July to December?
Actually, I think that should be July to December.
Okay.
If I remember right, the... I think that's a typo, sorry. Ordinance 2016-09 related to 2015 financial carry forwards. Ordinance 2016-10, the Comcast franchise agreement renewal. That will be the first reading of that, and we'll be asking you to set a public hearing on that. Proclamation declaring June 2nd, 2016 as National Gun Violence Awareness Day. And then three consent items that were all placed. Actually, I see one that we have to correct because we have a review of Resolution 2016-15 during the business meeting, and then we also have it on the consent agenda, so we'll have to get that corrected. So two items on the consent agenda, the Fletcher Landing Road End Improvement Project Award and 2016 Island-wide Asphalt Repair Contract Award.
So you're going to need to also add to that agenda the Olympic Drive discussion again?
Yes, we will have to.
And possibly the electric utility again, depending on whether you've been able to meet with the task force?
Yeah, if we're able to meet.
Right.
Okay, then we're into June. First study session in June 7th, we have the community services funding discussion. That's related to biennial budget. Also related to the biennial budget, the initial capital improvement plan review, and then review and affirmation of the cost allocation methodology. Looking forward to June 14th. We have Wyatt Way Reconstruction Phase 1 update, public hearing on the Comcast franchise agreement, a presentation on the pollinator improvement project, a public hearing on the ordinance related to the aquaculture regulations as a limited amendment to the SMP, an ordinance related to the city's building codes and regulations, the 2016 annual road striping contract award, groundwater assessment, professional services agreement, amendment 1. I think we can put the resolution concerning the use of neonicotinoid pesticides on the consent agenda. I don't know if you want to see that twice as a regular business item. It could certainly go from the May 24th meeting to the consent on June 14th.
You can schedule it that way now. It kind of depends on how it goes when we talk about it the first time. So
yeah. And then a proclamation declaring June 20th through the 26th as Pollinator Awareness Week. And then the other items are consent agenda items that would have been moved forward from May 24th.
Any comments, input from anybody on, as you sit here, on what we've heard so far tonight on the agenda?
I'm guessing the Islandwood non-motorized trail might take more than 10 minutes next week.
Well, I think that we'll try and limit it to that because if it's going to take longer, then we're not on the same page, but I think we may find that we are on the same page. So let's just shoot for that and see what happens.
My question is on the summer meeting schedule. You're talking August or July and August. Is that more or less the summer? Because the June calendar looks pretty
Yeah, I think last year it was July and August that we tinkered with. So.
Okay.
Okay, go to the order. Mr. Peltier.
It came to my attention that on Friday the chamber's having a breakfast at Islandwood, and on the program will be John Rose discussing Olympic Property Group's plans for Suzuki. That's what it says on the announcement. And they'll be talking about Cave Avenue, development on Cave Avenue as well. So I'm planning on being there. I want to hear what his plans are for Suzuki.
So, Raj, a number of us are planning to attend that, so you might notice that just in case. At least I know I'm going to be there, and Ron and...
Is that a city expense, or is that something we pay for?
Oh, no. We buy food.
Okay.
I don't know. Anything else for the good of the order? I'd like to underscore the need for each of us to be proactive in finding people to fill our advisory committee slots. ETAC is really thin. Design Review Board, I think, needs a number of people. Everything else needs something. The only one that we're comfortable with right now is the Planning Commission, because with them being right in the middle of the comp plan update, they've all agreed to either be reappointed or re-up for an extra year to get that done. So we're good there. But please look at that list and think about your acquaintances and get us some volunteers. Anything else? Great. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.